right.
You're right, are we? The logo started with Anthony telling me that he was thinking about doorways through to things as what the library within the community is on about. And he asked me, and I said, well, from a Maori point of view, it would the equivalent to that would be pathways, a pathway to here, there, or everywhere. And we eventually came up with this idea of pathway across the world. And for the Maori sense of that, I rung up Johnson Takarangi to talk to him in general terms about this. And I put to him various Maori words concerning pathways and concepts of pathways and so forth. And he came up then, after listening to me and what I was on about, with a little saying, Te ara whānui o te au, the wide pathway across the world. By making it a wide pathway, you're sort of implying actually many pathways. But one of the features that this name brings up is that we're talking in the widest geographic sense and also in the widest time sense. When we say across the world, we mean across the world of time. Well, and that fits, I was talking to him about how a library is about events and things, not only at a distance, but from the past and looking into the future and all things like that. Now, when you turn the te as into tēnei, and in this case, the owl has just broken the word tēnei out, so te ao ne is like saying tēnei ao. You have diminished the area of significance to this where I am now standing, and very much now. So I'm talking about te turunga, this chair. I mean, this one I'm sitting in now, here. Whereas using it the other way with just the te, meaning in European va, rather than this, it opens it. Now, my concept in listening to Anthony's concept all along was opening things out, opening doors, opening pathways. So the original that I gave you actually is the closest and really the only correct usage that we can go to. Otherwise we diminish it. Perhaps should be something different.
Is Steve doing anything today?
Yes.
I tried to ring you before, by the way, just to alert you to this.
Thank you.
I couldn't get through.
Yep.
The logo itself, then. You see. And and so we went through a series of exercises with the logo in
Alexandria.
Yes, looking at the history of libraries as well as the concept of moving out across the world, and also pinning it here in the Manawatu from a Pāwhenua basis as well, and so yes, we had the Alexandrian Library building. What was that lighthouse?
That's right, we had the lighthouse.
We had the lighthouse that's associated, one of the great wonders of the world. It was immensely, immensely. That was in an Alexandria, wasn't it? Yeah. And, you know, as a beacon shining out across the world. And there's lots of staff input to it. We'd do several designs, and then Anthony would show it to staff, and they would all comment on parts of it and come back and follow some of these lines. And eventually we... And it's hard to say how we got to the final thing, except that there's another issue that always comes into it, and that the logo, just as a visual image, has to first of all hit you and attract you and stand alone in spite of its meaning. And so we... very, very recognisable amongst all the dozens of other logos if you put it in an advertisement like paper or wherever else. And this is the other Māoriness of it, is identity. So if we do the same logo as yours when you were at the museum, then there'll be a confusion between the two institutions. So in the finish, you have a synthesis of all of those ideas. Some people might call it a compromise. But I think that the final decision lies with that aspect, identity. Yeah. And I think in this case, the hand, above all, is the little bit that makes it absolutely different from anybody else's. And it comes from the very, very simplest of concepts. If you ask someone the way, you'll first of all just point. Yes, because I was thinking of you as well, that at times you can promote your own materials, even if you didn't have a coloured printer, if you could change the ink in. So
yes.
Some towns you could turn out a whole run of stuff in green.
Yeah.
And the answer from Canon was no, they've only got black for the one that we've got. But you might find that yours, some of the other colours, the thing to watch and alert it to me is when you take the other cartridge out, it will most likely dry up before you use it again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'd have to say, right, we're going to use this cartridge right up or half of it, and then throw it away and put a new black one there. So that hand concept came also from a very human action of just, oh, it's over there, just pointing away. And then after that, I realised that this is humanising the logo. So much of logo design now is, as it were, corporate driven. So you're thinking of perhaps too much of institutions, whereas this library with its family ideas, running into the way that the books are organised, is a very human based institution. Very much so, so I think the hand helps that concept very much. The shape then underneath it really is a simplified concept of the world. It's just part of the globe, and then you've got a big pathway coming through it. And then underneath it is, as it were, another pathway. But this time, it's an open book as well. And so that came from two particular ideas. So you have a major pathway, and then you have all the little byways and all the rest of it. So this is a little byway, but it's also a book. And that's Palmerston North, and that's City, that's all. Yeah.
Yeah, really?
Yes. So, and that was, but running alongside, I think running alongside the time of doing this is when we were picking up from the Atfields an invitation to work with them that had come right at the very beginning of the designing, and then lapsed, and then it was picked up again with the idea that I would have an input into the internal design, first of all of Pacific Room, and then once we organised and going to do that, Atfield saw the concept that I was going to use. He wanted that concept to flow through more of the building. And so we started to then look at what I was then looking within this concept here of the, you know, of the pathways, where we started. We start from home. And the Pacific Room is just that. And the Maori aspect of the Pacific Room is correctly in the Pacific. See, and what I mean by that is that we are primarily, Maori are primarily a Pacific people. Around about 6,000 years ago, moving out from Malaysia, a group of people who eventually became, you know, moved into the Pacific. Micronesians, Melanesians, and Polynesians. And then eventually our people moved down from the eastern Polynesia area down to New Zealand. So, and then here we are standing in Palmerston North. So, the moment you're standing in Palmerston North, from the Maori point of view, you're also standing, because your whakapapa goes right back into those early times and beyond, you're also standing in the Pacific and beyond, because the genealogies go back beyond the formation of the Pacific itself. You know, that is Maori genealogies as distinct from those movements that I was talking about before, which are genetic science types, understandings. And I had just started a series of works when all of this started to come about, which was a change of direction for me, from works that I actually have in the library, that many people sort of very briefly call the Hope series, where I indicate the mana of our peoples here and our lands, their connections with one another, and their dignity by placing a fine cloak up in the sky, reaching out and joining those things and doing those sorts of affairs. And I had met a whole lot of artists from the Pacific Rim, and had more than ever, well, we worked together, I should say, for 14 days, and so more than ever saw their tremendous energies. In the past, I've seen work that they've done, but actually see people doing the work and talk to them and hear them talking as they're doing it, and watch the process has a pretty tremendous impact. And I started to do a series of works based on that Pacific Rim. In fact, in terms of the layout, the map of the Pacific Rim. But the map was just a way of locating. And I used a little symbol, a triumph symbol. Called an, in Niho Niho Kaniwa, that is the tooth of the dragon. The concept of Taniwha is those powers and strengths in the world that, from a Maori point of view, are beyond the control of human beings. You'll try and negotiate with them, but you know that you can only get so far, that the volcano will erupt, or the earth will quake, or a storm will come, and at best you sort of roll with it rather than try and order it about. Above all, you have to be aware that those powers are there and can survive. And the Maori way of expression, which is sort of poetic abstract, is always coming down and trying to encapsulate in a smaller thing as possible, a bigger series of thoughts. So the little Niho stands for the dragon, and the dragon stands for forces. And I was equating these people's creativity with those great forces of nature. So in the map, I would use the little Nihos everywhere. And so the Pacific Room became actually one of those early drawings of mine, with the places of the Pacific all shown by Nihos. So what we were saying, that although this is a Pacific Room, this is a Maori concept of the Pacific, stated through Nihos, and bits of cloak. There's still, you can see in that one over there, the fragments of the Tainiko borders here and there. And when we come out of the lift on the Pacific floor, there is inlaid into the Tainiko a section of the logo, first of all. So that's saying the library. And then the very first pattern we meet is a traditional pattern within the Niho. And then gradually throughout, various other Nihos are there, inside them are different images from different cultures in the Pacific. Very quickly, that is what it's all about. Sometimes those are from are abstractions from some of the people that I met do. Sometimes it's what their ancestors before them have done. All of it treated, of course, in contemporary colour. So you're both looking backwards and looking at the present, and looking forwards, all in the one thing. And one of the reasons, for instance, I like that last rug that we did. To me, that's a very, very different set of colours. And there are some traditional based forms in there. And to see them with all of those new colours is a tremendous sort of impact of present, past, and future just achieved through colour. This was the first. What Anthony came out here as after I'd done about 9, 8 or 9, maybe 10 or 12 things, and it was such a change in style that he felt that it was very important if possible, to show, to keep the group together, to show the change from there, way over there, to here. And so decided that, if possible, the library would get a group at the very first sit. You don't often get an opportunity to do this, an artist to get a set that has a particular significance in terms of that artist's change in their work style. You can see that this one is very much based on a map of the Pacific with the cloak still over the top. So business as usual, but here are all these little needles around where different people have come from. And the bird symbol that I've been using in the earlier series as one of the images of migration and navigation is here with, of course, the cloak symbol still in the bird. And that was there partially because that's what I've been doing over the last few months and years just before that, and partly because these people had all, as it were, navigated down to New Zealand. And they were going to navigate away also, and my thoughts were beginning to navigate along with them all over the show. And then this was the second one, where again the cloak is still at the top of the picture, albeit the bottom part of the cloak. The map concept is still there, the needles are there still, but two things have happened. Some of the images of the cultures had started to emerge. Now, from the American people were coming ideas of hawks and eagles, and concepts of the races, the red race, the yellow race, the black race, the white race. But I put them as four hawks, as it were, and equated it with the Maori saying, Ngā Hauwe Pā, the four winds. And because, this is a Maori perspective of these ideas, and this is something that keeps coming up all the time. Now, as well as that, the navigation idea and the finding people and moving around the world and the way that they were and so forth, I came back to Maui and his journey into the around the Pacific, fishing up the islands of the Pacific, those ancient Polynesian stories. And once I started thinking of that way, I started thinking, where had we come from? So we're beginning to get, in this one, a touch of the Asian coast drift into it as well. But also in this one, there were very personal things. The marae we stayed at had a feke, an octopus, on its mahi board. So, and the octopus was one of the creatures that were called a taniwha that our people mentioned when they were coming to New Zealand, and sometimes they were helped by taniwhas coming here, sometimes they were challenged by them, and so on. And so it had that double meaning, that personal experience on that marae, and then the historical one. And then the personal one, we gave one another little gifts while we were there, things that we had rather quickly done on the spot. And Judy Watson, the Aboriginal lady from Australia that was there, gave me this one, and this is an Aboriginal rainbow, the bone box and seeds, different inside, that inside. So you can see a bit of her coming in there, right in this very second one. They were moving away from the general to the little bit more toward the particular. This is that's Maui, and with his three brothers when they went out fishing to fish out in the North Island, New Zealand. Here he is. This time he's just by himself in this one. This is, yes, it's a cloaked figure. Yes, meaning just a chiefly figure. Yeah. And what's happening in America here is this bird image is coming actually into the land. So the land, you know, the land and the bird are coming one. The bird out in the Pacific, you know, as I'd originally used, this time I'm looking backwards in time, and this is the Maori eagle. So I'm thinking of American eagles, and this is the extinct Maori eagle, and that's very much the way it's shown on cave drawings in South Island. It's an immense poor cave, and it was extinct about 600 years ago, from between 500 and 600 years ago. Hmm? Oh, that's its name. Oh, the big one, yes, big belly.
Yes.
Then, by here, two things have happened. The body of the cloak has disappeared, and only the fragments of Tāunika Gorda are left. And the geographic statement here has turned, of North America, has turned entirely into eagles. The needles are beginning to get patterns into them, and you can see the rainbow is becoming a stronger symbol in here, and the China coast is becoming stronger there. Then the extinct eagle here is changed to and the Aboriginal rainbow now has become a rainbow for all of us. And nearly all of our cultures have lovely stories about rainbows and what they imply and so forth. And you can see the nihos are getting even more vigorous. And now North America is just one big bird. Then. All the geographic ideas have now disappeared. The eagle inside a hoop, the hoop being a North American concept for the oneness of the world, is there. But the rainbow deals for the whole of Australia. And that was the initial group. And then there was a discount. I felt it was important then for it in the collection to have this one, because you see still here, there's an element of the old still left, and that there's a bottom line. Now, it's all floating. And that's right. And then this one, which is number 10, so this one will be, I think, number 7. And then in number 10, I've come to a construction, a design construction, and that became very, very consistent for quite a long time. But I also wanted you to have it, because it makes a very direct statement with this lovely little one that Rick Barto gave me, and here he is here. So what we have happening by this stage is that in, the nihos in this one changed to, from triangles to diamond shapes, which refers in Māori tuktuku to pātikitiki, which is the flounder, which is fish. And here I'm referring to these places as the fish of Māori. These are the fish that he picked up, as it were, in the Pacific. But inside them are little images from the cultures or the people themselves. And that then became a pattern. This is from one of the jewelers. This is based on her work. And that's based on work of Lillian Pitt, there too. Whereas these are images down here of ancient China. So you have both contemporary images and very ancient. Some of the images from China I found by going to the library. Distant time with Siberian and Eskimo material, well, just because of the nature of the landscape, you don't find thousands of archaeologists heaving up there to dig underneath the ice. So you are also getting all of these pieces. That's from the contemporary Japanese artist. This is from one of our Maori ladies, done on a beautiful piece of handmade paper that she had done herself. She's over in Wanganui. Kawai from Hawaii, what does she usually make? Cover, that's tapa cloth. But she, company, not only did that, but wanted to have a try doing a lino block. So she did a lino block, and that's one of the boys, and he was just a young man. We had people like Joe Daniels, who would have been in his in his 60s, as I am, to young people from Vanuatu, and he was from Vanuatu, who were 18, 21, something like that. One age mix. And Melanie Yahtzee gave each of us one of those prints. Done especially for her artist friends and the black sheep of the society. from Samoa, a monoprint. Harry Fonseca, one of his posters, and a few other little things there. I don't quite know how we're going to deal with those. But the idea. A person I haven't mentioned, other than showing you that work of his, is Nelson from Japan, who had his own handmade paper, and in Japan, in Tokyo, he has a shop very famous for handmade papers. But he himself was an artist, but he's equally, if not better known, for marvelous papers that he made. And I watched him working on those with green of envy. But he and Rick Barto have known one another for many years, and Rick would often tell me things about him. And I knew that I didn't say how much I liked the paper because he would embarrass me by giving it to me. But anyway, when we got back here, I got back here, the Van Uffelens, told me that they'd got a contact from a firm in Littleton that wanted them to buy their papers and sell them, which they don't do. But they showed me the catalogue, so I was able to get my Japanese handmade paper. Now that, and so I've added that to the list now. Because what it's meant is from here on, I no longer use this heavy watercolour paper, machine-made paper. I use handmade paper all of the time now. And I've got bits from all over the world. And it virtually means that almost every drawing comes up on a different paper. For a while, I did a series just on these, and then I got access to papers from Himalaya, Philippines, Japan, and North America.
Mexico, you showed me. Is this a
Mexican? Mexican bark paper. And if I may show you the latest. We got some papers. So that's the latest on a piece of papers. I've got two pieces of papers. I got that in London. Now, once you see those beginning ones, you can see where the concept for the Pacific Rim has come from. It's just that suddenly spread out and become the whole library. And of course, so when we put the pictures on the wall, then we're just being consistent with everything else that's there. And of course, this key one here is this key rug. Well, this rug is a key, in that it has, as it were, the whole concept of the Pacific, and then these others are just different aspects of it, you see, including in this, in both these two, the logo. This will be very hard to in a way explain to people, because the logo was conceived separately, the other one was conceived separately, but they link together in
time, but also through.
Yeah, in the library. So in that particular one there that you're on, you see you've got the two very much put together. And whereas that one over there, is leading into the genealogy room. This one. So I first of all start with the Nihil in the middle, again, that whole triangle shape. It's the basis of the, you know, of the idea for the floor. And as I've said, it is about those tremendous powers that are beyond human beings, because in a genealogy, in Māori genealogy, you go through people, first of all your own, if you're going up from yourself, which is the way around, but let's start from there. You go through people to concepts that could be called gods, but beyond that to very abstract concepts. For instance, the one before Rangi and Papa, you know, the Sky Father, you know, there's a stage called Te Whaitua, which is active space. That had come out of various aspects of light, which had come out of various aspects of darkness. darkness itself had come out of the concept of the duality of nothing. In Lorry, nothing is not a single sort of state of unbeing. It's a basic state of the capacity to alter and grow. It's like a positive and negative ion. And so, in this work, we have all of those ideas coming forward. Now, how does that come? We have the Nihal, which is this concept of extreme energy from, as it were, the universe, if you like. Then the steps up and down of the Potama pattern there, and they're like steps of genealogy. Then on the outer edges, another Tupinam panel-based concept, Roy Matatoro, the albatross tears, which is sometimes used to express the tears that you have for the departed. And as well as that, you've got very much today and tomorrow's colours. And this is from an understanding that I have of genealogy that is like that, is saying that it's not just saying what your identity is, but it's talking about your belief. That is, your belief is that you were there well before other people, and you have always been there, and you always will be there. So it is about the future, but it's the colour that takes this one into the future. So, but that duality that I mentioned in that story is it tends to be in all of these things. So you've got ancient images of culture in that Pacific series, along with very contemporary images of stuff just done in the last few months. And you're also getting dualities of colour, very strong discords at times in these colours, which give energies and vibrations to the work, which will be hard for some people, and to other people very exciting. The key one here has brought into the centre. You know how in those earlier drawings I bring into the centre either a bird or something else. In this case, I brought Maui and his fish hook. So I'm starting here in New Zealand. And then that ring around him could be conceived as the Pacific. But it's also the Northern Pacific's concept of the oneness of life in it. And then the rest of it's just pure map, as it were. Here's the what I was about to say before I never got round to, when I talked about number 10 being the base from now on, is that on the left-hand side of nearly every picture is the Asian side coming down toward the bottom, over Australia, and up into the Pacific and down to New Zealand. And if you like to come back up to the Asia, across from Siberia to Alaska and down the American continents. And that's from a contemporary sort of genetic understandings of the movements of the people in the Pacific, starting in northern China about 20,000 plus years ago. One group gradually making their way down the China coast, some of them eventually moving up from Malaysia and into the Pacific. But at about that time, movement started into Siberia, that were eventually between ice ages to go over into Alaska and go down there. But with an underpinning always of Australia, who had actually got there from So it's sort of a bit of a history of the South, the Pacific, the room, human history, and also the geology of Gondwana land pushing down to Australia, and then pushing that river further to New Zealand, and then the Pacific plates from the other side, from the Americas, pushing against that and pushing us up. So right, geologically, we have been the end results of interrelationships right across the Pacific, and I'm just exploring those interrelationships all over again. Yes, they come from, and they are the same basic concept as they were in the cloaks. They start in the cloaks. They started as the tie that you would use to tie a cloak on. But being up at the top, they refer to the initial line of the which is, as it were, the initial genealogical line. And then the rest of the strands of the cloak, like strands of genealogy, came from that. And if you think of the ties coming out from that, they're going back up into that Te Whaitua, that active space. And in the drawings, in the earlier drawings, they would go around and activate the space around the cloak.
Like those ones up there.
Yes, that's right. In this one, though, there's a double meaning here. The Japanese imagery in a lot of the first drawings I did and still do from time to time came from a legend that Nelson told me about a Japanese fisherman called Urushima To, great fisherman of the time. Saved little turtles and children, and when he was out fishing one day, without any luck, little turtle's head appeared above, and he was invited out to the turtle. And he was invited to stay as long as he liked, just tell them that he wanted to go back. So he eventually did this. And the turtle queen gave him a little black box, a tile, which is why there's a line up the lid here. And I think that that's where I got the line up the middle, actually, to make the book from. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And he was told, but when he got back, nobody could recognize him. He couldn't recognize anybody else. How do you recognize the village? There's the Shima Towers. But anyway, he opened the box and all the and of course I've actually did a drawing called Puffs of Smoke, because little puffs of smoke are still talked about. Now, this is an ancient legend, and no one's sure what it means, so it's still told.
Yes.
So if a thing is too obvious and meaningful, then it just gets left behind. But this little mystery has stayed with these people, and now these mysteries have gone right around the Pacific. So that's the puffs of smoke from Urushima Taro's black box. And there's a bit of smoke inside, as you see. And on the other side, of course, is that thing from the flag, the sun, and a needle inside that. So maybe the Maori sun. Hello, Gabriel. Good, thank you. Oh, all right. I sound dull. I'm terrible. Gee, I don't think I'll make it till 5 o'clock, you know, Gabriel. Yeah. All right. Can you just hold on? I'll go down and get it.
Thank you. So you see, when I was telling you about the parting of the ways between ourselves and Claire and the
entity,
over all of this, that's why you've got that concentration in the Pacific area, and then a diminishing.
So how are things going? How's your work going?
To the explanation, she got up and said, oh, I've got to be back. And so she missed the whole, what we were on about, and how it could have then really just gone through the whole thing.
Yes.
So that's one of our great
Yes.
Things.
Oh, sounds great.
I could almost feel that it has been
Yes.
It's
good. That's right, yes, very difficult. And we've got no idea of, you know, of that group of people. And I think the idea would be to try and sell them. Now, what are they, monoprints, really, aren't they, by the time of... Yes, they're really a painting. Yes, yes. Now, what would you have normally in New Zealand charged for one of your monoprints? Like that one you gave me? Or a line?
No, I don't know how much it was done. And I also don't know if it's done.
I don't think that
Yes.
It's quite complex.
Yes.
And John will understand the project, but he's been through it with the science team before.
Okay. Well, it looks like you'll be into about something like
many people don't want to understand.
$1,000 American or $800 American.
And I guess the way that you
there
write it is going
would,
to be something
I think would make it possible
I think
to sell.
What we do is
and give you a reasonable, you know, I think yes, and. My experience was that once you've got much over the 1,000, then you're not going to get people are just passing by. And so you've got to think about what you want to happen. But I would put $1,000 at top. It's different if you're getting a very good salary like Darcy's. I think it would be nice to sell. Yes. Well, in other words, we're just about at it, aren't we?
It was.
You were talking about 800 American or 800?
Not far enough to. Not
yes,
far
I think that sounds pretty good to me.
A slot.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there'll be should be no difficulty selling that, and yet at the same time, if nobody bought it, you'll be quite happy to have it back again.
Yes.
What you want to say is that you want whatever figure that you make is. That's the price to you. What they do beyond that, so you can say. Okay, just express it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good, thanks. Yes, yes.
The negative shapes.
Right? Good. Bye-bye for now. That was Gabriel Belts. Her arm and she can't make her own paper anymore,
oh,
so
got a bit of a rarity here.
I was talking about that shape.
Which shape?
That's shape.
Oh, that's a seed.
Oh, it is?
Yes, if you go back to the original, yeah, there it is there. She's got several images. See it there?
Oh, right. Yes.
It's that one. And whereas this one is this one.
Yes.
And sometimes...
Oh, there's the seed. That's...
Yeah, that's the bone box. That's this one.
Oh. That's in the
cup. Yeah, I think it is.
And
yes, that's it. In fact, I've put it in twice.
Yes.
And you see the pattern going around the there and there. When I used to do the cloak rugs, the body of the cloak would be done like that. Mm. So that's sort of combining the two ideas. Mm. So I suppose I almost got a bit manic about it. Dealing with other people's images, I was very, very frightened of recolonizing again. Mm. Kept reminding myself, this is a Maori perspective, this is my perspective, and bringing some of these older patterns back into it, one way of reassuring myself when I ask them, there would be no problem. There was a lovely story out of the first one. I was doing the very first one here, and the personal work of Kay Miller used many of the things that she showed on colour slides as well as she did there. She would use this hoop and put different things inside it, you see. So many of her actual drawings. So when I was doing these needles, she comes from Boulder, Colorado. She'd come over when I was doing it. I said, Kay, can I use your hoop? Yeah. She said, what do you mean? I said, can I draw you? And she sort of, she's still blank, and then eventually, yes, of course you can. The story, I realized what the story was. The people are had themselves and their culture so much bloody stolen from them, had never been asked a question like that. It was outside her experience. She didn't really know what I was talking about. So. And actually, when I did this one, the address and place that Julie Watson came from was in New South Wales. I said, Julie, I'm going to put your needle on here. But where do you want it to go? What do you think's the right thing? I said, you bugger about all over Australia. She said, oh, I think we should put it where my grandmother comes from. So that's up where her grandmother comes from. She says, that's where I'm going to put most of my stuff. I wouldn't know what the Indian name is, but that's where that comes from. It's and when I say it's Indian, I heard it from Hawpai Indian, and certainly Kay up, which is down in this area, Kay up in Colorado used it as well. How many of the Indian Nation people use that concept, I don't know.
Well,
In that case, you've gone on to an interesting thing. And very much in that one, the negatives were thought of artistically, that they very rarely had any had any symbolic meaning for me, except, and not in that place, there I'm obviously making what I call a pita, what people call a kuru, and there. And that was done not for any other meaning, but to emphasize that this is very strongly a Maori element within this pattern. And it's as broad as that, it's generalized as that. Obviously the use of that type of image with three fingers, etc. It comes from Kōwhaiwhai patterns, in a rata pattern. You'll excuse me, I'll bring you one down.